What exactly is the purpose of the protest?
Two things: to end the mandates on vaccinations, because and by the way, I'm vaccinated. I'm fully vaccinated, and I usually get the flu vaccine every year. So when we're doing the anti-vax thing, sorry, that's not us. So to end the vaccine mandates and allow people the freedom of choice, whether we agree or disagree with that choice, it's their freedom of choice. And to end it's called the Arrive Can. It's a COVID passport app, similar to what the provinces have rolled out, which they're now rolling back. And this app goes on your phone and, well, it tracks you. It has your COVID health status on your phone.
Welcome to the Michaela Peterson podcast. This is an emergency episode. It's an interview with one of the leaders of the Canadian trucker convoy. I tried to ask neutral questions that every Canadian might be interested in, and people outside of Canada for that matter. It was recorded today. I hope this helps clarify the situation in Canada for people. A quick word from the sponsor of this episode. Dad and I are on tour, and NordVPN is a lifesaver. With the state of the world at the moment, you can't be too careful about your data. NordVPN is the fastest VPN in the world. It keeps your data safe and anonymous, and nobody gets to tell you what you can or can't watch. I can't recommend them enough. They have an exclusive offer for my listeners. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/TMPP, like the Michaela Peterson podcast, TMPP, or use the code TMPP to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, plus one additional month for free, plus a bonus gift. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Enjoy this episode. Okay, welcome to my podcast.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
I really wanted to talk to you to get you on to address a whole bunch of questions that I think Canadians and people across the world who are watching what's going on in Ottawa with the truckers protest. Uh-huh. I'm hoping to have you address a whole bunch of those questions. So I want to get through as many of these as you have time for.
Sure, of course.
So first off, who are you?
I'm just some guy who owns a truck. My name is Benjamin Dichter. I am, I guess, the spokesperson, one of the board members of the Freedom Convoy. And I was brought in, I guess, 24 hours after they just decided to go with this, Chris and Bridget and Tamara in Alberta. Tamara's been a friend of mine for many years, and they decided they're going to do a convoy. They're fed up there. If you've been to Alberta recently, you know, rural Alberta now looks like a third world country and has for several years now. And they've all had their lives and their businesses crushed. And they decided this has got to end. Many of them were about to lose their jobs, because I know at least one of them couldn't actually get the COVID vaccine because of some cardiovascular problem. It's none of my business. I don't ask. And, she was going to lose everything. So they decided we have to do something and make a statement. Let's go to Ottawa. We'll have a convoy. Let's do a GoFundMe. Maybe we'll get, $20,000, which is, we'll cover some of the gas, and let's go and see what happens. And 24 hours later, Tamara called me and said, you won't believe this. We started this. Our GoFundMe is at, I think it was at $150,000 at that point. And she said, do you mind coming on board and helping with messaging and, helping organize this as much as you can from your end? And I said, yeah, for you, anything, no problem. And so we started, and it just grew organically from there.
Okay. So you said it started partly because this lady couldn't get vaccinated because of health conditions, and she was at risk of losing, or she was going to lose her job because of it. So what exactly is the purpose of the protest?
Two things: to end the mandates on vaccinations, because, and by the way, I'm vaccinated, I'm fully vaccinated, and I usually get the flu vaccine every year. So when we're doing the anti-vax thing, sorry, that's not us. So to end the vaccine mandates and allow people the freedom of choice, whether we agree or disagree with that choice, it's their freedom of choice. And to end the it's called the Arrive Can. It's a COVID passport app, similar to what the provinces have rolled out, which they're now rolling back. And this app goes on your phone and, well, it tracks you. It has your COVID health status on your phone. And, you know, I explained this on Tucker Carlson and a couple of other shows that the first time I ever had to use it was a week before all of this started. I was crossing the border from New York into Ontario. And I went to hold my phone up to the border agent with my QR code. And I said, here you go. I don't know what to do, but do what you need. And he said to me, no, I don't need to see it. And I said, what do you mean you don't need to see it? He said, well, when your phone gets within a certain radius of our booth, your phone just pops up on my screen and all your information is there already. So I could see you before you even came up to the booth. And it occurred to me at that point, you know, everybody is so concerned. Many of our politicians posture the concern of data tracking from big tech firms like Facebook and Twitter and whatnot. But at least with those platforms, we can opt out. But with the government, we can't opt out. And what's the next step? Are they going to start rolling that out to all government buildings across the country? Like, I don't know, maybe that's hyperbolic to think. Maybe that's just too dystopian, but it's clearly a possibility at this point. And maybe every police cruiser will have a receiver that could monitor each, you know, COVID app and phone in its vicinity. Maybe it's a bit of a slippery slope argument, but we keep sliding down this slope and nothing seems to be changing. So I think there's a cause for concern. Maybe I'm crazy.
I don't think you're crazy. You're welcome. Okay, so I have a whole bunch more questions for you, but I figure I might as well hit this at the beginning. What do you guys need to see from the government in order to stop protesting?
Well, I mean, ultimately, we need to see mandates removed and the passport app dropped. That's it. It's pretty simple. And it's not like we are asking for constitutional reforms or we're asking for reparations or asking for any dramatic change to our country. We just want things to be restored to the way they are. And we want the government to get out of our phone. Like, it's pretty simple, you know, but we haven't even had anybody from the government sit down and meet with us, which is interesting. You know, Justin Trudeau can meet with Joshua Boyle. He can meet with Omar Khadr, but he can't meet with his working class transportation infrastructure who have what I think are reasonable grievances, right? And again, it's not about vaccines. People can get vaccinated. People can quarantine at home as they please. That's fine. But it should be up to the individual to choose how they want to live their lives.
Okay, so what does it look like on the ground in Ottawa? Like, what kind of people are over there? How many people?
How many, I have no idea, and it changes day to day. So on the weekends is when things really peak up. There seems to be a lot of people that are coming from, you know, other jurisdictions, whether it's Quebec. We get a lot of people coming from Quebec, Southern Ontario, and now people coming from Vermont and New York State and New Hampshire, coming to essentially the biggest block party in Canada's history, which we call Trudeau's Truck Stop. It's an amazing vibe. You know, some of my guys came back, was it last night or the night before, they came back to the hotel because I'm a little bit incapacitated. So I can only go to, you know, a number of meetings that in certain areas. And I said to them, okay, you guys hungry? I'll order dinner because there's five or six of them here. They're like, oh no, we're stuffed. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, everybody's barbecuing and throwing food in our face. So you walk around downtown Ottawa, every trucker, every other, you know, group has a little barbecue set up. They have flags, they're taking pictures with people. They're trying to spread this message of we're peaceful and loving. There's music going on. Like, there were bouncy castles until I think a couple of days ago when Justin Trudeau thought the bouncy castles were a threat. But the vibe has been amazing. It's like, it's what I would imagine without, let's say, the recreational drugs. It's what I imagine Woodstock would have been, like that sort of feel to it, or Wembley, like those sorts of, you know, big party atmospheres. That's what it's like in downtown Ottawa. It's amazing. And on top of that, you know, they talk about, oh, the blockade. What blockade? Yeah, there's a lot of trucks parked illegally, but we have an ops team that, you know, have experienced ex-military, ex-police, that have established emergency routes for emergency vehicles. Traffic is flowing around the city. Slower, there's no question, but traffic is still flowing. We're trying to minimize the disruption to people in the city. And the local businesses who have stayed open and violated the mayor's order to close, by the way. So the mayor has issued an order that any business that opens will be issued a ticket for however much money it is. I don't know. But like the shawarma shop, like that we've been going to just about every day, they said, we are so thankful. We have never been so busy in 3 years. Wow. Thank you, everybody, for what you're doing. And all the businesses that have been staying open have been prospering.
Okay. One of the criticisms I've read about you guys in the media is that this is an alt-right thing that's going on. And a whole bunch of the people who've gone to Canada aren't even Canadian. And so you mentioned that there are people who are coming in from Vermont in other areas. So how do you feel about that?
Well, what happened to peace, unity, and love? What happened to open borders? What happened to we're all one world? We're a post-national state. It's amazing how they flip from that ideology to we need hard borders now. And Canadians are completely different than Americans. The Americans that are coming are definitely a minority here. I would guess the largest contingency, separate from the truckers who have come from the prairies, are people from Quebec. And that's been most amazing. Seeing people from Quebec hanging out with the people they're supposed to not like from Alberta, becoming friends, talking to each other through Google Translate. And there was a couple of pictures I took with a couple of guys. One guy was from Alberta, one guy was from Quebec, and they're both holding signs. I had to take a picture. One said freedom, one said liberté. They were hanging out all day together, standing beside each other and just shaking everybody's hands and hugging everybody and whatever. And that's been the vibe the whole time. And you know, I told this story a few times of one of my friends who was here helping with my leg after I broke it, which was fun. She went to the Tim Hortons to grab coffee in the morning. And she said, you won't believe this. I just went to Tim Hortons and there's these two guys, and she's quite astute. There's these two guys in line. They clearly are friends. They didn't just meet each other, and they're talking and they're laughing and they're pointing and all this sort of stuff. And they're dressed as truckers, so we assume they are. She says, but they're talking to each other through Google Translate, because one was French and one, I think she said, was from Saskatchewan or Alberta. So they couldn't communicate directly, but they formed a friendship and some sort of bond. And they're starting to try to learn a little bit of French and a little bit of English. And it's just lovely. It's the first real unity I've seen in Canada. I mean, you know, we've all grown up with this baggage of all the separatists here and the Western separatists, and nobody likes each other. And nothing could be further from the truth. When government and the media get out of the way, the people unify and they learn to love each other and respect each other's differences. And that's what we've seen all week.
Okay. Interesting. Well, that's good to hear. What about all this news about, I mean, you get certain pictures from the media, and at the very beginning, there was some sort of statue story. It was like, oh, these people are desecrating statues.
Oh, and the hoax hate. I call it hoax hate.
Okay. So let's get into that a little bit. What was that about?
Well, there were a few of them. First, there was the Nazi flag, that we're alt-right, we're all Nazis, and whatever. I'd hate to tell Mr. Trudeau, I'm Jewish, and some of us still have families in mass graves in Europe. So that smear is not going to work. Tamara is a Métis, so she's from the Native community. So we're the racists, but Mr. Blackface, he's the virtuous one. it's clown world. It's ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
So somebody, and this happens a lot in protests where people, you know, agent provocateurs or whatever you want to call it, they'll stage different things, right? And so in this particular case, I mean, nobody saw this until it was all over the web. Somebody unraveled a swastika flag, a Nazi flag. And it was nowhere near any of the protests or any of the trucks or whatever. It was some back corner of some park. And there just happened to be somebody with a $10,000 Canon camera perfectly lined up for the shot. You know, this was the money shot. Mm. So I don't imagine putting the sign mandate freedom on Terry Fox would have been terribly offensive to the man who required those basic freedoms to run across the country, which we can't do right now, right? Without being harassed by the government. So that was the second hoax hate. Then there was the war memorial hoax hate, which was, it started, and you can tell it's a hoax when they keep changing the reason. So first it was a truck parked on the war memorial. No, no truck parked on the war memorial. A truck parked in the spot adjacent to the war memorial that the CBC usually parks in at Memorial Day events. So perhaps they were upset one of our trucks took their parking spot. I would be upset too, right? Then the 24 hours or 48 hours later, it became somebody desecrated the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. Have no idea how. It was just the word desecrated, no specificity whatsoever. And then 24 hours after that, it became somebody urinated on the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier or the War Memorial. Somebody took a picture. It was a little bit of a warmer day that day, of a snowbank that had water melting on the bottom, took a picture, and that apparently was urine. I guess they haven't realized that, you know, snow melts at 0 degrees, but okay, fine. So, and what was interesting about that is because, you know, they're so disconnected. I don't call them the global elites. I call them the global scavenger class. They're so disconnected from regular people. They miscalculate one very basic phenomenon we all know, that many people in trucking are either veterans themselves or come from veteran families. So just the fact that that narrative was out there upset them hugely, to the point that a bunch of them got together with some veteran truckers. They got their shovels and equipment and stuff. They shoveled all the snow around the war memorial, cleaned it up better than the city has ever done, made sure there was no garbage or any of that sort of stuff. They went and got bouquets of flowers, and they took a beautiful picture of it somewhere. It's somewhere on the internet. They lined the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier with flowers, and then they assigned a team that would rotate shifts 24/7 to ensure nobody would be desecrating the war memorial or the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. So that's the reality of what went on.
Okay, yes, that's definitely different than what you're hearing about in mainstream media. Things are pretty crazy right now.
Let's call them legacy media. They're not mainstream. They're fringe media is what they are.
Okay. Legacy media, that's definitely more accurate.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's see. Has there been any violence?
Not that I've seen. I mean, maybe the kids playing on the bouncy castles are considered violence because, you know, we live in a world where words are violence, so... Who knows what the fake news media defines violence, but no cops have been injured. No people have been injured. There's not been any scrum. I mean, again, so many of these people come from veteran families. They respect the government. They're not here to overthrow the government because they spend so much of their lives serving the government. So it's a completely different, you know, dynamic than perhaps, you know, the leftist militias that protest where they're anti-government. That's not us. So no, we haven't seen any of it. And also people are cognizant of being baited by, you know, leftist activists into, you know, a January 6th like incident and whatever. And when nobody is taking the bait, we understand that that's not what this is about. This is about a peaceful, loving protest. And in many ways, especially people who've been coming from other jurisdictions, it's been, you know, a source of inspiration for younger people to see how our process works and how people can come together and unify and want to talk to the government and that the government works for us, not the other way around, which is seems to be the mindset of some people in our political class.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'd like a bit of a timeline. I know that this is what I think happened from what I've been reading, but you can tell me what actually happened. But I believed government officials tried to hire tow trucks to come take out the trucks and they just said no. I thought that there's been an issue with police arresting people. So can you give me a bit of background information on the tow trucks, police involvement, and how people are trying to get rid of the protesters and how that hasn't been working?
Okay, so with the we'll just start with the policing and the arresting. From what I understand, a handful of people were arrested earlier in the week, early in last week, and it was an intimidation tactic, right? Charge them with, you know, give them a ticket for mischief. So let's drive them down to the station, give them a ticket for $150, and that's kind of it. From what I understand, it hasn't been anything more than that. I'm not sure. And on the police level, we've actually had a great relationship with the police on the ground. Many of us, not only do we have people from military families, but many of us come from police families. Like, I have family in policing as well. So we kind of understand that the ground level police officers are in a difficult position, and we have a common problem and phenomenon in Canada where the upper levels of policing, the chiefs and deputy chiefs, sometimes are often very politicized. They're more politicians than they are police officers, because they're appointed by these ridiculous police services boards by people who are in political parties. So that's something that has to end and be fixed in our country. But that's another issue. But so the relationship with police has been great. Many of them have, you know, there was a time when last week they were taking they're seizing gas cans for people. Mm-hmm. And they thought that would anger us. And most of us, maybe I have a dark sense of humor, I was on the floor laughing. I thought, if you want an epic PR disaster for police, that's the way to do it. Take fuel from people who just want to keep themselves warm. And then the next day they threatened, oh, we're going to raid all the trucks. And what did they end up doing? They found some guys that were having bonfires to keep themselves warm. So they went and seized their cord of wood. And I thought, yeah, stupid is going to double down on stupid no matter what. And I was predicting a little before then that I told people in a couple of speeches I gave, I said, the chief of police of Ottawa, I promise you, is going to take early retirement. And guess what he just announced 45 minutes ago? That he has resigned his position. Because he too is being put in a position and being politicized by his local city council, who are very rabid, aggressive leftists that would have done well during the Bolshevik era. Like, some of the rhetoric coming from them is not becoming of anybody who holds office in a liberal democracy. It's quite concerning. But even he, I think it was too much for even him. And last week we had a senior staff sergeant, which if you're in policing, you know that's a significant position. A senior staff sergeant also resigned his position last week.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So what happened with the tow trucks?
So with the tow trucks, sorry, you apologize, I forgot. It's so funny. There's so many things happen. The federal government and the city government were calling just every tow truck company that they could, even down to tow truck companies in New York State. And oh, wow. we had that tow truck company from New York State reach out to us saying, yeah, guess who called us for an order? They said they need a massive, you know, convoy of tow trucks to come for Ottawa. And he said to us, but don't worry, we, like all the other tow truck companies, informed them that we all have COVID, so we can't come. And then one tow truck company came from, I think it was Quebec, I might be wrong. They showed up with a small fleet of tow trucks and they said, yeah, sure, we'll come, we'll show up. They came and they joined the protest. It was hysterical. Because
wow.
Remember, tow truck drivers, these are people who work through the night. They see emergencies on the road. They see accidents. They sometimes help people in need who are stranded. So there's a little bit of a brotherhood that goes on behind them. And that bond seems to be much stronger than some government bureaucratic demands. Go figure.
Okay. So what do you think is going to happen? Like, what happened recently with Trudeau?
It's interesting when he gave that press conference, I was watching that and I thought, like Theo Fury, correctly, I think I agree with his assessment on Twitter. He said, well, Trudeau has played his final card. We'll see what happens next. And when I watched that press conference, he said something funny saying, you know, this does not bring in the military. And I thought, yeah, because you tried last week and the military told you to take a hike. And we know that because we have people in the military. So Trudeau hasn't learned this axiom, a general without an army is a fool. And that's the position he's in. So now he's, you know, gone all hysterical, and even people who are on, you know, the left side of the political spectrum, but who, you know, embrace the values of freedom. And I'm thinking the Canadian Liberties Association, for example, and even the Toronto Star today, even they have said, okay, this is way, way overboard. So he's made himself look like a fool to his own people. And what are we going to do? We're just going to wait.
Wow. So can you explain to any of the people watching who don't know what happened, like what exactly happened? What are the Emergency Measure Acts? A bit of background information there.
It's best to talk to a constitutional lawyer about it, but they started this on the city level. They just declared a state of emergency last week because, you know, a bunch of trucks are illegally parked. Oh my God. It was so funny. And then Doug Ford, you know, Mr. Conservative, Mr., you know, for the people, yeah. I think nuked his own political career as well, by trying to seize all our funds and declaring a provincial state of emergency. Okay. Nothing changed because, well, there's a bunch of trucks parked illegally. Okay. And now they're going to try on the federal level. Okay, what are they going to do? Can't call in the military. Like he said, he doesn't. This doesn't mean they will. And I don't think there's any appetite from people in the military to go seize, to go arrest truckers, people that they may know from their communities who are just parked illegally and having a peaceful protest and have gone out of their way to demonstrate that it's peaceful, it's about unity, it's about love and respect for one another. And we're just going to sit here and wait. So I don't know. What's Trudeau going to do next? We're going to get the Air Force to do a flyover. I mean, that'd be cool. I love planes, so I'd love to see that. But what's that going to accomplish? I don't know.
Okay. What happened with it? So then this is another thing. So many things have happened. This is a very strange situation. But it's a strange situation. What happened to all the donations?
Well, we're just going to have to litigate it. So the GoFundMe donations, which was, you know, the fake news media was first reporting that it was frozen, which it wasn't. You know, the first day they're saying all the donations were frozen. And I thought, don't you have eyes? You can see the progress bar of the donations go up. That's not frozen. That's just GoFundMe's regular procedure of, you know, filtering any new campaign, they do it to ensure it's abiding by AML regulations and international banking regulations. And they have to do their due diligence. And okay, that's fine. We understood that, right? And again, when we set up GoFundMe, everybody's like, well, why did you go to GoFundMe? Because we just thought we'd get like 20 grand for gas. Like we didn't realize that people would start using this as a statement, a political statement to show their displeasure with a political class, which is what it's become. So they eventually released, one point something million to us, which I'll get back to that in a second. And then they said, we're just going to keep the rest and give it to whatever charity we want. So then in came Florida man Ron DeSantis and the Attorney General of Florida, Ted Cruz, a bunch of other people saying, this is criminal fraud and this warrants an investigation by the U.S. government. And then all of a sudden GoFundMe is like, no, we're going to give it back. It was so funny. Yeah. So GoFundMe, pathetic. So then they said, okay, we're going to refund everything. Lots of people have gotten their refunds. Not everybody has. Lots of people still have not. Wow. And maybe there's just a bottleneck on their end. So GiveSendGo then reached out to us, and we had some people working with GiveSendGo. They spoke to Jacob, the CEO, and he was great. He said, we'll do everything in our power to help rebuild it. And as soon as they launched the Freedom Convoy campaign on GiveSendGo, they got 5 million DDoS attacks per hour. So somebody is very motivated and has many bots that were attacking that website, and they were overwhelmed by the amount of, by the number of donations that were coming into the platform. So they just, you know, smaller company, they didn't have the infrastructure of GoFundMe. I couldn't even get on for 7 hours just to see it. I wanted to, you know, look at the messaging and stuff. It took me 7 hours before the webpage would even pop up. And it already achieved in the first 12 hours, $1.5 million in donations. And somebody told me we hit 4.5 million in like the first 24 or 36 hours, something like that. But I couldn't tell because it would, the website was so spotty, right? So it got up to $8.5 million. And then Doug Ford, remember, man of the working class, right?
Yeah.
Decided he's going to go to court and try to block this funding for all these truckers who need to get fuel. Some of them are having repair issues and all that sort of stuff. And Doug Ford was going to step on the throat of the working man and have the government seize any funds that came in from Give, Send, Go. So Give, Send, Go then said, okay, we're going to stop any transfers. They didn't transfer anything yet. We'll hold on to it while you guys go to court and litigate it with the Ontario government, which is the process right now. So then the Bitcoin community came out, because I have been a secret Bitcoiner for many, many years. And they reached out, they started a drive trying to raise Bitcoin for the truckers. And that got up to $1.1 or $1.2 million in a wallet somewhere to go to the truckers. And that was primarily for legal funds is what they want. They want us to get very aggressive with the media and the government that's been attacking us. So, and that's going to happen. It's just a matter of time. So now Krista Friedland decided, you know, it's that philosophy they have. Everything I don't like is Hitler. Well, everything I don't like is illegal, right? So now Bitcoin is illegal. Everything's illegal now. Like, that's not how our legal system works. And unfortunately, they're probably going to find that out the hard way. So right now, we're just sitting back and waiting.
Okay. Let me see. Hmm. What other questions do I have here for you? I think that covered most of it. Okay. How long do you, like, what happens? Okay, so here's one. What happens if Trudeau invokes the Emergency Measures Act? Ontario, Doug Ford has already said he's okay with that. He thinks it's reasonable, right? So what happens if that comes into play? Are you guys concerned on the ground that people are going to start getting arrested or bank accounts frozen?
He's already invoked it. Remember, he did that last night. That's what the press conference was.
Okay, then I have a question there. And I don't know anything about this, so feel free to explain. But I thought that that was a suggestion, and then premiers of each province have to agree. Or is that done?
From what I understand, it's got to go to parliament and they got to vote on it.
Yeah. Right? And that hasn't happened yet, right?
No, I don't believe so. Maybe that's what's happening today. Okay. I mean, you can see how concerned I am.
I can.
Yeah, okay. At some point, they're going to learn the people run the government. They work for us, not the other way around. And it might be a hard lesson for them to learn. I mean, I'm having people now suggest to me that Justin Trudeau might have just laid the path for the end of his political career and the government to fall. And the justification was, look at it this way. This is from a political insider I'm friends with. He said, look at it this way. Jagmeet Singh keeps alienating himself and the NDP from the Sikh community, which we have so many Sikh truck drivers here. Like they've been a big part of the people who've been feeding people. Like, they're amazing. They're wonderful. So he's now been alienating himself. Even the most hardened of NDP people understand the importance of protesting, because that's what they do, right? Like, that's
supposed to be the party for it, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So if Jagmeet Singh is pulled by his own party, and we know he's not all that popular right now, well, then Trudeau is not going to have the support for a minority government. Then the government falls, and I guess we go to an election. Like, I'm not sure, because I guess a lot of this is unprecedented. I'm not a constitutional expert. So the more they keep doubling down on this stupidity and agitating things and escalating the situation, doesn't affect us. We're just parked in parking spots. and on the street, but they're just shooting themselves in the foot. But like I said in the very beginning, you know, extremists always double down on one strategy. They don't have, they don't seem to have the fortitude and the observing ego to look at things from the other perspective and say, okay, well, you know, how can we maneuver around this and get other people on our side and negotiate? Like, it's quite shocking that somebody who was elected with something like 19% of the Canadian citizenry actually voted for Justin Trudeau, are sitting there on their high horse, like, we're in command. Like, no, no, you're not. 80% of the people want nothing to do with you. And it's your job to come to the table and talk to us. And listen, if he does, he will. There shouldn't be much of a conversation. It's just, dude, end the mandates and get rid of this passport app. That's it. This is pretty simple stuff. Like, the solution, like Pierre Poilievre said, is staring him right in the face. It's so easy. And then they can claim victory and they can say, you know, our policies saved millions of people, and but now is the time to go back, and we didn't really want to do it, and unfortunately, but it was the best thing for the country, and spin it however they want. That's fine. We know they're going to do that. Some people will believe them, some people won't. Who cares? We just get back to what we should. But they're just holding on to this, and it's just crazy. It makes no sense.
Okay, well, I agree that this is absurd. I'm surprised, actually. I thought sometime last week there would be a rollout of, well, country, provinces around started dropping their mandates, right? Like, mm-hmm. Alberta said they were going to drop it. Even Ontario said things would go back to normal eventually. And so I'm surprised that at a federal level, they're not just looking at all the provinces and all the people.
All the countries around the world.
Oh, I know. Like, yeah. Or the rest of the world, basically. Yeah. Give or take Australia. Australia's still a bit iffy.
And remember they said, you know, the winter, that's the most dangerous and darkest time for COVID. Okay, well, we're now 3 weeks into this. We've had tens of thousands of people here hugging, partying together, dancing from various provinces in Canada. And I was in the hospital getting my my leg reconstructed for surgery a couple of days ago. And I didn't see St. Elmo's fire and, you know, masses of bodies being rolled into the ICU. And I spoke to the people there and they said, yeah, we're worried. We don't want to have any, you know, massive outbreaks in ICU. And I said, how are things now? They said, oh, yeah, it's quiet. Okay. So if it's not happening now, then we all know that this policy is the wrong policy and it needs to be abandoned. And that's probably why the rest of the world is doing so.
Okay. Well, is there anything else you want to tell people? And is there anywhere people could go to support you guys, even though those initiatives keep getting shut down?
Yeah. So they can go to my Twitter, which is BJ Dichter. So it's spelled BJ DICHTER. They go to Tamara's Twitter, which is Tamara_MVC. And it's very important. Okay. The reason we've been focusing on our personal platforms is because we've also had to navigate censorship online, right? Dave Rubin is setting up freedomconvoy.locals.com. So that's the next thing that's going to be set up where you'll find information, okay, be able to donate and whatever. The Give, Send, Go is still there. So you'll be able to donate. The Tally Coin Drive, I think there's another one now set up in Bitcoin. The initial one was put on hold since the announcement from the Canadian government. But now there's another group of people that set up Tally Coin. So if you just go to Freedom Convoy or Canadian Truckers, you'll find something. Again, we're not so centralized because of censorship. Those three things, but basically monitor our, oh, and Quiggin Report is another podcast. It's another Twitter account that works with us. Tom is one of our team and is one of the accounts that we administer. If you keep an eye on those and myself on Getter, same BJ Dichter, you'll get all the updates you need. We'll post links. You'll get a sense of where we're at. And we're randomly posting, you know, links to support if you want to send money on Give, Send, Go and all that sort of stuff. And we keep getting everybody up to date with what's going on. That's really the best way. Again, oh, and there is a freedomconvoycanada.com website, which again is being hacked, DDoS attacks and all that sort of stuff. So when it's up, it's up. When it's not, it's not. And to everybody who's listening, that I just want to let you know, this is not about left or right. You know, I'm not a hardened right wing person. You know, I like the variation of the Scott Adams approach, which is, you know, for me personally, and I think this explains a lot of us. We like the goals of the left, we like the systems of the right, and we like the freedom of libertarians. And somewhere somewhere between all of that, that's where we all fit. And that's why we have people across the political spectrum. Like I did an interview last week with this girl. She's an independent journalist, because I've been trying to do a lot of independent journalists. And she said to me, I used to be a separatist until 2 weeks ago. I bought my first Canadian flag because I've never been so proud to be Canadian. It almost puts a tear in your eye.
Make me cry. Yeah.
So this is all about having our voices heard. It's peaceful. It's about love, unity, and restoring our basic freedoms to choose to do what we want in terms of our bodily autonomy. We understand people are afraid of the virus. People should be free to protect themselves and quarantine at their will and do whatever they want. But the government has gone a little bit out of control in terms of how they can regulate our lives. And like, where does it end? Am I not going to be able to ride motorcycles anymore? Am I not going to be able to eat fast food anymore? Like, that's where we're going with this. So it's inclusive of everybody. We have, you know, for those who care about racial diversity, I don't really care. I care about individuals. But we do have people from various communities from all over the world. Like I mentioned, the Sikh community has been a huge help in feeding people because there are a lot of them in trucking. And the example of the Quebecois faction and the Albertan faction, everybody coming together. Like, this is, I think, it's not attributed to us, it's attributed to everybody who got involved. This is the thirst for Canadian unity that our country has always needed. And I think we finally got there. We just need to get our politicians to realize that's what's happened.
Okay, well, thank you very much for coming on. It was fantastic.